The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Thursday, the 26th of September, 2019. On the podcast today, I have Chris Bailey, founder of FinancialOrbit.com, and Chris talks about how tough the markets are at the moment and the following companies. By way of example, some of them: Aston Martin, Metro Bank, Sirius Minerals, Shaw Capital, Patient Capital Trust, Imperial Brands, and Pearson. Also on the podcast, Alan Green, CEO of Brands Communications, talks about Thomas Cook, CVS Group, Open Orphan, Bidstack, and IMC Exploration. By the way, we recorded this before the Bidstack news came out, so we don't actually cover that, but we do talk about Bidstack generally. Also on the podcast, I have two lists for you: the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs too. By the way, if you receive an RNS via the platform here at Vox Markets and the app is free to download, by the way, at your favorite app store, or your only app store you can use. Download the app, and if you see an RNS you like, hit the thumbs up button there, and it could appear on this podcast. And of course, it could appear on the front page of Vox Markets, which is voxmarkets.co.uk.
Vox Markets is an online community of investors that runs a free mobile and desktop platform that allows you to track news and updates about any UK-listed company, offering RNS push notifications, detailed charts, pricing data, and much more. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Chris Bailey, founder of FinancialOrbit.com. You all right, Chris?
Yeah, very good. Thanks, very good.
Yeah, we've just been talking about how rough the market is, or it seems quite rough. I've seen people, you know, on Twitter saying they're giving up sort of, I've seen quite a few of them are traders and stuff, but they're finding the smaller cap end of the market quite hard. And I've seen companies struggle to raise funds. It's taken them a long time to do it, and they're raising a lot less than they need to, and it's all sort of discount, you know? So it's a tricky market, isn't it, out there?
It is. And, you know, there's been a couple of well-publicised sort of mid-cap companies. Aston Martin, you know, having a bond issue at a 12% coupon, you know, a stunning coupon level,
wow,
you know,
yeah.
having to, you know, pay that amount. It could be even 15% under certain circumstances they'll have to pay, you know. And I assume then no banks willing to forward monies at sort of equivalent levels. It's quite amazing. Metro Bank, of course, got turned down. They found insufficient demand for their bond offering at a cool 7.5% yield or coupon. You know, it's interesting times. Investors are being quite discriminatory in their judgment, and in the sense of those two names, Aston Martin and Metro Bank, I can understand why.
Yeah, you know, well, do you know what? You've got Sirius Minerals, which has been a private investor favourite as well, for failing to raise money. And I think, doesn't it say when you have these failings to raise money, normally when you sort of start of a bull run or mid sort of cycle, you know, everyone's quite optimistic. Right now, I think, you know, so we are towards the end of a cycle, I think, the bull run, and people are very wary to, you know, loan money. You know, they're holding on to cash, aren't they? It's a red flag,
that's
isn't
right.
it, really? Red flags.
That's right, because what they're thinking is, you know, these companies that are raising money late in the cycle or ahead of a potential period of uncertainty, what's the likelihood that they will work? You know, is it possibly just that they're trying to put a sticking plaster over a gaping wound, which could well be the case for, you know, Aston Martin, who's gone bust six times in their history, still got big debts and whatever else. Metro Bank's obviously had a lot of bog ups and operational issues and regulatory whatevers. And so, you know, there's questions, and people's sensitivity to those matters, correct sensitivities, mean that even at big old coupons, that they're struggling to get bond issues away or having to pay up those big coupon levels in order to get them away. It's not a good indicator, is it really, at all? But I tell you what, Justin, what's really interesting to me is actually something I don't normally talk about large caps, and we can go on to a couple of large cap stories in a few minutes, but I think we've got to start with the AIM sector and what Shaw Capital have said today, because it's absolutely amazing. Shaw Capital, well-known, respected name on brokerage, investment research and related, they're going to delist their own shares from the AIM market, and when I last looked, the shares were down quite heavily, I think 20-odd percent, maybe a touch more, and you can understand why people are worried about. You know, obviously, it's not going to happen overnight. It'll be a period of time. But clearly, many people won't want to hold something that is only going to be listed apparently on the Bermudan stock market or something rather than the London one over the medium term. But what does it tell you when even a stockbroker or a researcher, a company who's a significant part of their business is actually writing and floating and getting companies onto the AIM market or maybe the main market, chooses not to do it themselves anymore? You know, what's that saying? It's kind of striking. You know, no wonder their shares have taken a hit today.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, these are the people who champion the stock market and, you know, promote the benefits of it to companies, and yet they're delisting. It's like, in my mind, it's another red flag. You know, I genuinely think those inversion curves we saw, everyone says, you know, everyone panicked at the time, but the stock markets are rallied a bit, especially in America. And I just thought that recently the S&P was very close to size, like less than half of 1%. And I thought, really? I mean, is the global, you know, economic state in such a good way that we're in just that far off the highs? I don't think it is. I think it's setting us up for a big fall, if anything. And I just think, you know, it takes about 18 months, they say, for that that inversion yield curve to play out. And I think it's going to happen. You know, I genuinely do. I think we have lots of red flags happening. And that's why I think, you know, get a bit of cash, look for value rather than anything to go with growth. And yeah, I just think, you know, it's on the cards, you know?
Well, it's certainly, a discriminatory market. And you've seen that again in the comments today from Woodford, even Patient Capital Trust, who've announced in a regulatory update this morning that they're writing down, I think, another three more of their investments in terms of the kind of the carrying value and everything else. And obviously, this again reflects the difficulties of maybe companies that aren't listed, early stage. You know, a lot of the investments that make up this Patient Capital Trust and obviously have contributed to the broader issues Mr. Woodford and crew have been struggling with. Those issues are not going away, and I think it plays into what you just said, Justin. The fact is, if we get a slight change in circumstances or people's perceptions, they're going to say, hang on, this company's not worth £1 billion, it's actually worth £100 million. And obviously, if you're carrying it in the books at an implied value of £500 million or something, that's a big old knock. And I think you've seen that again from Patient Capital Trust, you know, which is trading at a discount, but unfortunately your underlying NAV is going down as well, and that's not good news. So when I last looked there, the share price of that trust, which is still trading, of course, was down 4% I think. So again, not happy times for Mr. Woodford, you know, a real fallen giant.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, he may be patient by the capital, but I think shareholders are not, so they want to get out.
Well, he's lucky, of course, with an investment trust, you're locked in, and obviously that's the saving grace of the Patient Capital Trust versus some of his other products, which are open-ended and people are trying to run for the doors, but obviously have been stopped to do so because of the suspension. But it's not good, is it, when you have, well, his trouble, of course, with the investment trust is he's geared it up slightly and you've got, you know, a falling value of these often unlisted early stage investments. You know, that again can be a big problem, especially if you're banking for facilities, judging by various press comments and everything else, they are. So, you know, that even there in the investment trust format, it ain't good. You know, you've got to wonder whether the investment trust board at some point say, you know, perhaps we should hand the management of this over to somebody else. But, you know, we will see.
Yeah, marvellous stuff. Okay, Chris, what's next? Anything else there?
Well, couple of big caps. You know, we started with the rant about small caps and malaise and everything else. A couple of big caps, it's actually a couple of bits of negative news, to be honest. Imperial Brands, actually a stock I own, obviously a tobacco company. Their shares are down about 9% when I last looked. They've revised down their hopes for the US market, particularly around some of these next generation products, vaping and e-cigarettes and related. You may have seen in broader news that the Juul business, that's J-U-U-L, this sort of new founded vaping thing, which has really grown very fast in the States over the last couple of years. They're having a few problems, lots of more regulatory insights and management changes and whatever else. And that's also helped to blow up a potential big tobacco merger in the States between Altria and Philip Morris. But anyway, Imperial Brands are saying today, yes, the vaping and related market is under pressure. It's changed quite quickly. There's more regulatory oversight. Growth's a bit lower, et cetera, and this is impacting their revenue line. So no huge disaster. Revenue growth has gone down from 4% to 2%, but flat earnings per share, some investors are saying, hang on, you know, they'll start to worry about sustainability of the dividend and stuff like that. I think personally that's a bit overstated, but I can understand why people are concerned. Shares down 9% today to something in the 18 quids. I am an owner, as I said, and to be honest, I think the stock's cheap, but, you know, with news flow like that, you're going to take a hit on day one. For me, I still see a bit of value there. So that's Imperial Brands, one of the, I think, the biggest faller in the FTSE 100 today. And then we've got Pearson's. Pearson's a bit of a diversified company now. Used to own things like the FT, but doesn't do so anymore, but still owns things like Penguin, the books brand, and various other publishing names. Now really focused on education, which you'd have thought is a big growth area. The trouble is there's sort of a lot of disruptive elements in education coming, lots of online courses and stuff like that. And so they've made money historically in textbooks. That's been their big thing. But now, of course, with the online revolution, you know, not so much who buys a textbook anymore. They're still sold. But, you know, the pricing's gone all over the place. And they reported that in North America, the textbook market has been difficult in the higher education space. And that's impacted their numbers. It looks like about a 10% downgrade to earnings per share, and it was that's induced a sort of a not dissimilar fall in the share price when I last looked. So Pearson's looks a bit unhappy. I don't see any need to chase this share or to bottom fish in it. I'd think if I was bottom fishing in one of those two names, it probably would be Imperial Brands. But yeah, bit of a rough old day in the large cap space too.
Yeah, it's a big old drop, 16%, when you're worth over $5 billion, isn't it? So
it's come as a shock. And I think the trouble is people have kind of got comfortable with Pearson's strategy. Kind of education is a good theme, but the trouble is I never bought into the share or the concept of it, because I just know that the margin, there's lots of changes in education. The internet is a big revolution there, and they've been making big fat margins in the textbook space, and you know, they're under pressure.
Yeah, well, do you know what? I'm investing in a small cap company called Way Education, which is online, and essentially they've grown previously at 72% this year, 44%, and they said it's that growth is not slowing down. You know, it's online. It's and of course, I mean, it's, you know, online has affected all parts of our life. So why shouldn't it affect education? And I think it's a lot. Do you know what? At the moment, I still find our educational system a bit old fashioned. I mean, if I have to go in and find out what my son is doing, pretty much, I have to go into the parents' meeting and all this. I would like to be able to just do it online and just look at how they're progressing online. You know, and being more interactive that way. And it's just be more accurate. And you could look at it daily rather than sort of once a quarter. So yeah, it's, you know, there's a huge benefit for doing not all of it, but some parts of it more online, you know, and even
that's right, and learning too. I mean, you know, the use of computer facilities should be much more ingrained within the classroom. I think they're getting there. I think they understand it. But obviously, it's like anything. It's change. It's trying to make sure you do that in a sensible manner. It might be funding in some senses. Who knows? But yeah, absolutely. The internet, used well, is a massive multiplier in terms of the availability of information. Of course, there's a lot of dross that goes with that. We all know that. And hence, the interpretation becomes ever more important. But, you know, that's a really great transferable skill, isn't it, for life? I mean, it's all about... in the stock market game, it's all about interpretation, broadly speaking. But in general, you know, other jobs outside of finance and investments and whatever, a lot of interpretive skills, and computer digital skills, these are hugely applicable around the space. So absolutely. I think all the education stocks get it. The trouble is it allows new competitors to come in, margins get compressed. You know, we've seen it in retail, haven't we? It's exactly the same. You have to be even smarter and even hungrier and faster to keep moving forward.
Yeah, absolutely marvellous stuff. Cheers for that, Chris, and we'll catch up next week, fella.
Sounds a plan. See you then.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Alan Green, CEO of Brand Communications, talking about stocks to avoid. You know,
stocks to avoid. Well,
like Thomas Cook Group. What happened to Thomas, you? Thomas, that was a good punt, wasn't it?
Well, as I said at the time, it was a punt, and it was a punt only. It was not an investment. It was not an investable company, but it was just a punt based on the price action. And
at the time, I thought you said,
I hope everyone got out. But
you said you've been this position before with Thomas Cook, and the last time it rallied strongly, one of the best results I've ever had. And you said that, remember?
Yes, it was one of the best trades I made. Yeah, and I still stand by that. It was.
Yes, but at the time, their market cap was a bit higher. Hang on, the market cap was a bit higher than it was.
And they didn't have the debt that they had.
They didn't have 1.7 billion of debt. They didn't make a 6 month cap. They didn't use 1.4 billion of loss due to my travel write down. But also, they used 700 million in cash in 6 months. They were literally. They were beyond drowning. I mean, they were so underwater. I was surprised they carried on for as long as they did. But
they were. Yeah. Absolutely. But the point I was trying to make there is that often when you have a crisis and that crisis repeats at a company, you often see the stock revert to type, i.e., adopt similar trading patterns to previously. And in this case, Thomas Cook did it. I made money the first time around when the stock was bouncing between 9p and 20p, and then I held on it higher, and it then broke through 28p, and then powered all the way back up to £1.20. So that's when I made the money last time, and it was doing the same thing this time around. It was bouncing between 9p and then 20p.
Hang on. Things have changed, though. They've had a load of high street stores that no one uses. Yep, they're way behind the curve. They're swimming in debt. This is the business was untenable. It could not carry on.
They bought thousands of co-op outlets just at the wrong time in 2011 when everyone was going online. The acquisition of MyTravel was a disaster. It was a company of its era, and that era has now sadly ceased. And really, I think TUI this morning have said that they are expecting a fall in their profits this year. So it could well be sounding the death knell for the old package holiday company as we know it. And of course, well, not the package holiday itself, because of course everyone now buys that online, or you get the flight and you go to an Airbnb. But so that's how it's changed. But certainly, the company per se has ceased to be. It's shuffled off its mortal coil to.
When I went on holidays in July, I knew then it was touch and go whether it survived. You know, whether we get to actually a holiday. Then we did, and we obviously came back. And still, things drag on for a bit longer, of course. And rescue people said, you know, why didn't the government bail them out? Thing is, people will say, oh, it costs the government, you know, 200 million to be able to help. But the thing is, that's just a start. I mean, like I said, they got 1.7 billion in debt, and people weren't seeing the big figure there, the proper figure. And let's be honest, if it was a business that could have been turned around in some way, but this would take ages. It's not as big as an RBS, but I mean, the thing is, the amount of, you know, out of date. They didn't have many assets here. That's the trouble as well. But
I know.
So out of date. I just remember talking to the guy and hosting on the plane. And I said to him, "Are you worried about Thomas Cook?" And he was a guy from Liverpool, quite a camp young man. And he said, "No, it's all great. You know, Thomas Cook's great. It's going to carry on. All the rumours in the press, rubbish." I thought, obviously, I mean, why should he? Why should he look at a balance sheet? No one needs to look at a balance sheet that's investing, really. An accountant. But I thought he has no idea. These people working here sadly have no idea how indebted this company is.
No, it's very sad for the many thousands of employees. It's a very dark day, you know, for the UK travel industry. Very sad indeed. And of course, you know, there's a whole load of people there that have to learn a new set of skills. Maybe you can work for the online companies, but clearly the industry has evolved and changed and moved on. And
annoyed me?
Yeah,
this guy on what's his name? I think his name now. I'll find it. But on Twitter, blaming Brexit. I thought, insane? I said, you insane? This has been going, I mean, you know,
it's over 10 years.
I said, it's going to be a trouble of 10 years. It's been restructuring. They've had CEO after CEO trying to restructure this company and not doing very well, pretty much, or temporary fixes, you know, band-aids on a massive gash. I said, they bought MyTravel in 2007, which they over just before the financial crash, pretty much, which they overpaid for. They saw that as the new saviour for them, being online and all that stuff. Turns out they reported that, you know, the write-off, 1.4 million billion write-off in their half-year results. So, you know, it's nothing to do with Brexit. And in fact, if you'd looked at any of the news, no one's even mentioned Brexit. Fair play, normally you do get a bit of bias coming in, saying, oh, it's Brexit. But even on the news, no one mentioned Brexit. Nothing to do with Brexit. It's a systemic problem with the company, you know?
Old technology. It was a dinosaur company, and it had its day. It's just very sad, because clearly you look at the origins, 1841, it was first founded, steam train trips around the UK, and it grew from there. So it's a shame that the brand can't be continued in some way, shape, or form. But that's that. Yeah, it's a very sad day. Very sad day.
Marvellous. Okay, let's move on from, when are you better punch that one, Al?
Well, it was. And it still is. It's still the best one ever. But not second time round.
that'd be scary. To be fair, that wasn't my worst punt. I've had worse than that. Right, so, cool. What companies? First company, Al, what are you looking at?
Okay, a company called CVS Group PLC, CVSG. This is the largest integrated veterinary services provider in the UK. So why have I picked this one? Well, we have two Yorkshire Terriers, and I'm sure lots of people listening are pet owners too. Great fun, great dogs. And sadly, one of our Yorkies had a prolapse disc, and it was diagnosed as such. So he went in to have an operation, thankfully covered by insurance. But it was a costly op, £4,500 all in. And this was literally, they went in through his neck, so he had a load of staples down his neck, and they took the disc out, and we've had him in the house in a cage. He looks very depressed because he can't go out and doesn't understand why, but he's now recovered. So money well spent. But it's just kind of focused me into this sector, because there is so much money in the veterinary sector. And so CVS Group probably are the best exponent of that. They've got over 500 veterinary surgeries and branches and so on across UK and Ireland. They also have a series of diagnostic labs. They have 7 pet crematoria up and down the UK, and a lot of owners, when they say goodbye to their pets, I don't laugh, when they say goodbye to their pets, like to have little headstones and little cremations and all the rest of it. So we would do that. I think when our last dog died, we just left it with the vet, and that was it. But they also have
we don't need this kind of background, Al. Let's talk about the financials. No. So we should go into the financials rather than just talking about where you're going to bury a dog. Let's not worry about that. Let's just talk about the financials of the company.
Okay, so I'm just going through. they have Animed, which is an e-commerce outlet, and they have My Vet Club, which has partnerships with independent vets. So if you look at the chart, it's an interesting chart. Shares have rocketed from December when they hit 362p to £9 or 920 pence today. £9.20. Stop laughing. So the company issued a trading update mid July. The organic growth has accelerated across the company. Fully revenues up 24% to 406 million. EBITDA in line. Like-for-like sales up 5.2%. And they've also covered cost savings of 1.2 million. This is against the backdrop of a market where 45% of UK households own a pet, 25% dogs, 20% cats. Spending annually on pets in 2011 was £3 billion, and it was £4.5 billion in 2017. So this is a growing marketplace, and clearly CVS Group are consolidating and developing a business that basically encompasses every aspect of veterinary surgery and veterinary work across the UK. And this has been recognised by a number of city punters, although how seriously we take broker recommendations nowadays is up for debate. But Berenberg upgraded their rating for the company after the trading update from hold to buy, double the price target to £10. Peel Hunt also have a buy rating with price target of 950p. So we're getting close to that now. So some consolidation may be due, but this is the shares were as high as nearly £15 in 2017. So given the recovery this year, the shares may pause for breath, as it were. But there's also a dividend yield of 0.5% as well to contend with. So seen rapid growth since the start of the year, and really the results to date put down a platform where I think it's reasonable to expect further growth.
Yeah, I see. I'm scrolling down the RNS list there, just all holdings, you know, yeah. JP Morgan and Goldman Sachs hold stuff. And then I don't understand what's going on, because in one holding, they seem to be decreasing by a tiny amount. Then they go up the next one, they seem to be just holding or increasing by a tiny amount. So I don't know what's going on there. But Goldman Sachs and JP Morgan hold, they're obviously quite
That's strong. Right. So
big guys.
Yeah, well, they're big guys, and I mean, this is okay. It's a fragmented market in many ways, but it is a grey market, and the amount of money we spend per annum on our pets is increasing rapidly, and clearly, CVS Group. There are a number of companies in the sector, this animal as well, of course, but I think CVS Group probably has the best combination of exposure, if you like, to the UK and Ireland market. So, yeah, an interesting stock, interesting play. I don't own any as of yet, but I'm looking at the moment and thinking it might be a bit too high for now because of the growth since December. But if there's any pullback, I would look to get into this because I think it's got great potential.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay, marvellous stuff. Let's walk on then. Walk on. Go on. To the next one. What's next, Al?
Okay. Right, we've spoken about this company before. You've also spoken with Cal Friel, the CEO. Open Orphan is the company, an AIM and Euronext Dublin-listed company with a market cap of 16 million. Shares are currently 6.5p, been as low as just under 6p and as high as 8p on the year. So the company was founded in 2017 by Cal Friel, who obviously has a lot of history with Amaret Pharma and Fastnet Oil and Gas. The company reversed into Venn Life Sciences, and It is expected that it will make their company profitable with 20 million in revenues by the year end. At the point of reversal, it raised 4.5 million at 5.6p, so pretty well, or more or less, where the share price is now. Also, Mighton Group took part as well, and the company has since bought in a guy called Maurice Treacy, who's got he's well respected across Ireland in the genomics industry. Maurice Treacy is now on the board, and he has recently been talking about his role at Open Orphan across other platforms. Which we cannot name here for obvious reasons. So in 2018, over 50% of all US FDA approved drugs were orphan drugs. And orphan drugs treat rare diseases. Generally speaking, they're not profitable to develop without some sort of government grant or government assistance. But Open Orphan has created a multi-service platform to develop orphan drugs. Open Orphan Services, first of all, they're consolidating a number of smaller service companies into this from this fragmented sector. They can be very high margin, and the company is working to bring in a series of companies at present, as Cal Friel has said, under the Open Orphan umbrella. It has Open Orphan Virtual Rep, which enables pharmaceutical companies to engage with what they call key opinion leaders and physicians, and they've got over 4,000 of these people on the database. So it's a central focal point for companies developing orphan drugs to A, come in under the umbrella, and then B, have access to this panel of experts to help develop the drug and also reach out into the marketplace. Thirdly, it has a health data platform. The company is becoming a leading broker of rare disease patient data, and this database is growing rapidly. It's that profitable that the data per patient is worth approximately £3,000 per patient. So you multiply that out, then you've got great potential. And particularly with the recent developments at Amaret Pharma, Cal Friel has said he expects Open Orphan to go the same way. And with a 16 million market cap at the moment, the future again here looks very exciting. Great potential.
Yeah, I think it's a good combination of that, of cost plus business there, and also that blue sky data side to it. You know, I think that has a lot of potential, and it's starting to get the wheels going here. You know, starting to get the business rolling. It just needs some news to spice it up a bit, I think. But it should be headed in the right direction, I think. And yeah, but Kyle, I do like Kyle. He's a nice guy. He seems to be, you know, he knows what he's talking about. I did chat to Morris as well. That'll be on the podcast very soon.
Yeah, good.
So yeah, and the guys there know what they're doing. You know, got a lot of confidence in them.
Well, they do, and I think they've used their collective experience in the sector to bring everything together to basically it's almost a funnel, I think, to bring all of the rare orphan drug companies together and channel them through, expose them to a database of physicians and market experts, key opinion leaders, and then of course they collect their patient data as well, which they can then resell and market out. So it's a very good business model. I really like it.
Marvellous stuff. What's next, Al?
Okay, Joss, we've spoken about Bidstack on numerous occasions. Bidstack is, of course, the company that develops cross-platform in-game native advertising. So when you're playing online, I don't play games online, but if you're playing online and you're playing a war game or a football game or whatever, the ad banners that you'll see will be served to you by using the proprietary Bidstack technology. And it's a huge marketplace, and Bidstack have over the past year grown and developed their business. They've achieved industry certification, verification, and also attracted the attention of some of the big hitters in the industry. Derek Weiss, former Grapeshot CTO, Grapeshot and Oracle CTO, has come into the company. They have an advisory committee which incorporates people from Spotify and Trade Desk, and also a large database of clients already. It's at a very exciting juncture. Companies currently sort of trading at 26p. So it's moved above the moved back above that line of resistance that you highlighted recently, Jess. But I think with Bidstack, and I'm sure CEO James Draper, who owns 20%, would agree with this. We're waiting for news and we're waiting for developments. And you know, I hold shares in this company, and I'm very excited about the potential, because when the big advertising agencies, when your DoubleClicks and the others are in the sector, market out to the major blue chip clients, they're offering them a portfolio of advertising placement services across media, across TV, across the internet, and now of course they can offer them a whole new sector, which is the online gaming industry. Very exciting, and clearly I think once the news flow starts to develop and starts to accelerate, then I think we're going to see a corresponding acceleration in the share price growth too.
Yeah, well, the thing is, right, we're going to say it's valued at $64 million, and that's quite highly valued. It depends how you look at it. From people looking at it from a revenue point of view, it is highly valued. From people looking at it for the potential, it's not. Because, you know, that spike we had at 40 pence, that was a glimpse into the future. The future is very bright in this space. It's a lot of potential, you know, massive players in this industry. Who knows what could happen? And they are putting all the building blocks in place to earn, like James said, to seamlessly scale up, you know, and earn revenue, like, you know, basically a money printing machine, essentially. And that's what they're doing. So, yes, it'll take a while. It'll take a bit of a lag factor for the financials and fundamentals to catch up with the valuation. But it can do it. And it can way exceed where we are at the moment if they get it right. I mean, because it's a massive industry with massive potential, lots of numbers, big figures, every 180 billion, I think, is the size of the gaming market. So, you know, and all the big players are involved. Google, you know, all the guys, anyone can announce, Amazon, they're all in this, they're all at Sony, all the big guys are in there, Microsoft, they're all there. Yep. And Bidstack, they are offering this, they're a pioneer in this, you know, native in-game advertising space. And, and they, let's be honest, they've already done some contracts with some big guys. So,
well, they have.
Potential is massive. But we bring a bit of consolidation. And I think people need to, James needs to prove a bit more to people that it's going in the right direction at the moment. And I think also we've got the interims coming out, and people are a bit worried about the interims. Obviously, we'll look backwards, and people are looking forward. The share price look forward, the interims look backwards, and when those dates align, when you release the interims, then you may have a bit of a sell-off because the people, oh, hang on, this is valued quite highly. But again, you know, about a week or two afterwards, people realise the potential. Then news comes out, they think, okay, it'll start to motor again. Hopefully, then so. I still don't understand how people don't see the potential here, because we're talking about advertising and we're talking about gaming. First of all, the biggest companies in the world, like Facebook and Google, earn their money from advertising. So it's highly lucrative. And there's no people at the moment serving in-game, programmatically, like Bidstack can do. Yeah. So you could see the potential there, you know?
Well, especially given the size of the global gaming market and the rate at which it's growing too. You know, it's 138 billion, I think, growing 13% per annum. Yeah. So it's absolutely huge.
Yeah, I think next year, 180 billion, still growing at double digits, which is, for that size, it's massive. Cool. So anyway.
So when you set the market cap of Bidstack at the moment against that in context, then actually you can see the potential, I think. But again, it's all about delivering, and I think James and Steam have delivered very well so far this year, and we've just had a bit of a lull in the news over the summer months. But I fully expect with the interest that we'll start to see news flow gather pace.
Yeah, and he does say you can't wait to share. What he's been doing of late, so he's obviously very excited. More stuff to come. Marvellous stuff. Anything else, Al?
Yeah, just for a note, Irish Gold Mining and Base Metals Mining Company, IMC Exploration. IMC is their big code listed on main market. They just announced this morning the market cap is 5.5 million. Shares are currently trading at 1.9p. They announced this morning a collaboration between the Royal Materials Research Group at Trinity College Dublin and IMC with its rehabilitation and tailings project at the Evoca Gold Mine in the Wicklow territory, Southwest Ireland. So clearly that's a good step forward. And once we start to get more data from that going forward, it's going to be it's a prestigious collaboration. And once we start to see data coming from that research material, then I'm sure we'll start to see the IMC share price move higher. But it's a quiet little mining company, but developments take place here and there, and this is a significant step forward this morning.
Marvellous. Did the share price move there or not?
No, it didn't. No, it's still there at 1.9p. Well, there's quite a spread. It's you sell at 1.7, buy at 2.2. So, the bid and the offer spread are quite wide, as you'd expect with a company with a small amount of volume. But it's a step forward.
Lovely, marvellous stuff. Thanks, Al, and we'll catch up.
Speak next week, yeah. And don't fly Thomas Cook in the meantime.
I'll have a job unless I nick a plane with a brand on the side.
That's right. Nice. Yeah. Well, the last one came in on Monday morning, I think, didn't it? From the States. Yeah.
And on that lovely note, we'll end it there. Cheers, Al.
Okay, mate. Is it going out today or tomorrow?
Yeah, we're still on here.
Yeah, I'm still here. Will it go out today?
I said we're still on air.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, I'm still here.
You're still there. Okay, Just. Oh, my God. Okay. Thanks, Just. Speak next week.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They're at five. Mobile Streams, MOS. People punting that. Down 4.4%. At three, i3 Energy, 23.25. Up 5.6%. At two, Bidstack, good news today, 25.25 pence, down 2.8%. At two, Polarion, POLX, 19 pence. It was up, now it's down. No, it's now flat. No movement. And number one most followed again, 165 pence, down 1.95%. Metro Bank, people trying to catch a falling knife again. No idea why they're trying to do that. Top five most liked RNSs are Vast Resources, Shidezwa Community Diamond Concession. Vast, there, of course, is a ticker there. Up 38% there on that news. It's good news there. At four, Dev Clever Holdings, commercial agreement with Lenovo. Big name, that. Hopefully we'll get Chris on the podcast very soon. At three, Rehoboam Resources, West Brentford Reserves update. That's right there. And again, hopefully we get the guys on the podcast soon. At two, United Oil and Gas, interim results announcement. We have asked Brian, of course, but at the moment he's doing deals, so I don't think he'll come on the podcast until they're back listed. At the moment, they're not seeing the stock is not floated at the moment. But it's floated. It's not trading. And number one, Bidstack Group, extension of football manager agreement, another 3 years exclusivity. Very good news, that. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. By the way, we've tried to get James on as well. Hopefully he'll get back to us. But the interims are out next week, so I assume he may not come on until after that. Who knows? That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos appreciado.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.